Gerald Ford, in 1970, said, "An impeachable offense is whatever a majority of the House of Representatives considers it to be at a given moment in history." It's kind of cynical.
It is.
It's kind of dark.
But I like it.
I like it too.
So as you've probably guessed based off of the previous quote, this podcast is going to be all about impeachment.
I'm Paris.
I'm Sophie. We're twins. We have the same voice.
Yeah, we do.
It might be a problem. Whatever.
Not for us. Okay, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking to you about the history of impeachment, its process, and when it's been used in the U.S.
So the man whom we just quoted, Gerald Ford, for those of you who don't know, was Richard Nixon's vice president and later his successor as president after Nixon's resignation to avoid being impeached.
But it's a little more complicated than that. Gerald Ford was actually Richard Nixon's second vice president. His first, Spiro Agnew, was convicted of bribery and tax evasion and resigned from office before he could be impeached.
It's a great irony.
It's a double irony.
Anyway, our story begins in 1376 under the reign of King Edward III
of England.
And this is the first official record we have of an impeachment.
So his advisors were basically charged with corruption and Parliament impeached them. And this is like a big deal because now Parliament is putting a check on the king's power almost. Okay, and then in 1386,
10 years later,
we see someone charged with high crimes and misdemeanors, and this person is impeached by Parliament.
And that's where we get the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors that we see in the United States Constitution. But then we're going to skip ahead a bit to the 1720s with John Trenchard and Thomas Gordon. And what they do is they called for the impeachment of the king. And this is completely new territory. People have impeached high officials before, but never a monarch. And now no one knows what to do.
And what makes it worse is that Britain does not have an official constitution. So there was nothing written down telling them this is the protocol to impeach a monarch. It had never been done before.
So these two men, Trenchard and Gordon, were known as Commonwealth men. And what they did was they published their views on impeachment and impeachment of a monarch in what is known as the Cato Letters. And here's an excerpt from Cato number 33.
"The only security which we can have that men will be honest is to make it their interest to be honest. And the best defense which we can have against their being knaves is to make it terrible to them to be knaves. As there are many men wicked in some stations who would be innocent in others, the best way is to make wickedness unsafe in any station." So basically, Trenchard and Gordon were saying, we need our high officials and monarchs to fulfill their duties properly, and they need some kind of incentive to do that, and impeachment would be a good incentive.
It definitely would. And these documents are important because these are the kinds of things that the founding fathers of the United States were reading. They had Thomas Hobbes, they had John Locke, and now they had Cato. So now we're going to skip ahead to the Constitutional Convention of 1787.
But first, context. So people have been living under the Articles of Confederation, and these were established directly after the United States declared independence from Great Britain.
So that was in 1776, and it has now been 11 terrible, awful, long, horrendous years.
People hate the Articles of Confederation. Way too much power was given to the states and not enough to the central government, and this led to Shays' Rebellion. So the founding fathers had to come out of retirement, they had to write a new constitution, and they had to create a new nation.
Another one! And all of this was done at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. And there were a lot of issues that needed to resolve.
A lot of issues.
A lot of issues that needed to be resolved at this convention.
And impeachment was one of them. Many state constitutions under the Articles of Confederation had included impeachment
for a variety of crimes, which, interestingly enough, did not include high crimes and misdemeanors.
But the convention chose not to follow any of these state examples.
So there were a lot of arguments at the convention as to whether impeachment should be allowed in the Constitution or not.
No, it should not. The president can't effectively serve the people if he's being blackmailed by the other branches.
Yes, it should. It's the only thing that separates a president from a king. As George Mason said, shall any man be over justice?
No, deposing the president goes against the will of the people who elected him. And a 4-year election cycle is enough of a check on the executive's power.
But if the election is rigged, the alternative way to deposing a president would be through a rebellion.
Like Charles I.
Like Charles I. So delegates at the convention were allowed to come up with their own proposals, one of which was the Virginia Plan, written by James Madison.
And it's most famous for its proposal of a unicameral legislative that is entirely based off of population.
But there's also a provision within it that allows the judiciary to impeach national officers. But there's kind of a problem with this.
Well, there's actually two problems. The first is that it doesn't specify if the executive can be impeached or not, which is kind of important.
It's kind of the whole thing.
Yes. The second problem is that it gives the judiciary the power to impeach, and the executive appoints the justices to the Supreme Court, so they would probably be biased in his favor.
It's just not effective.
Yeah, so it's not a true check on the executive's power.
So then John Dickinson from Pennsylvania proposes that the power to remove the executive should be given to the legislature on charges of malpractice or neglect of duty.
And people like this. They're like, that's good, but let's change it from malpractice or neglect of duty to high crimes and misdemeanors.
And that's what we have in our current Constitution.
So here's how impeachment works. A member of the House of Representatives introduces a proposal, and they say, I want to impeach somebody. And that could either be a president, a vice president, or a civil officer. So then the House votes on it. If 50% or more of the House agrees that the official should be impeached, the proposal passes to the Senate. A trial is then overseen by the Chief Justice, and if 2/3 of the Senate agrees that that official should be impeached, they're removed from office.
And the entire process was specifically designed by the Founding Fathers to be difficult to impeach someone, because they wanted to ensure that the president, vice president, or high official actually deserved to be impeached. So that is why you need at least a 2/3 majority in the Senate, so it wasn't just because of political reasons.
So only 2 presidents have been impeached in U.S. history, and none have been removed from office.
So that's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Clean track record. So the first one to be impeached was Andrew Johnson, and he was the 17th president, taking power directly after Lincoln's assassination.
And that's because he was Lincoln's vice president.
So Johnson was Democrat, but Lincoln and basically everyone else in the government was Republican.
And he was officially impeached by the House for violating the Tenure of Office Act, and that was because he dismissed the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, without an official trial in front of the Senate.
But it was mostly just because he was a Democrat and everyone just wanted him out of office. It was, like, strictly political. Mm-hmm. And luckily, he was acquitted by the Senate, but it was extremely close. If one more senator had voted against him each time, because he was actually impeached 3 different times, he would have been removed from office.
Yeah. And the next time we see impeachment used is in 1999, 150 years later, and it's against Bill Clinton.
So he was accused of having an affair with Monica Lewinsky, a White House intern at the time. He was impeached by the House for his misdemeanors, but like Johnson, he was acquitted by the Senate because it's not a true high crime.
It's not enough to be kicked out of office.
But it's still not good.
Yeah. And the other time we see impeachment, but it's not actually used, is in the Nixon Watergate scandal.
And we kind of skate over this, but this is massive in U.S. history.
It's very important.
It's a huge deal. But Nixon actually resigned before he could be impeached, but he definitely would have been.
So no presidents have actually been removed from office.
Not officially, but impeachment is still an effective check on the president's power.
So impeachment is so relevant today, and people have been talking about a movement to impeach President Trump, but a 2018 Harvard poll shows that the impeachment of President Trump is actually very low for the priority of the public, and it's not really being considered right now.
But it's still good to know the history of impeachment and how it was intended to be used by the Founding Fathers, because it gives citizens a better understanding of the U.S. political system and its functions.
So that's our podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
So we're just going to leave you with a final quote from our Constitution before we leave. This is from Article 2, Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.